You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue. Good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you back here up north on a Tuesday morning. It is October 14th. Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom is standing by, and then at the bottom of the hour, we will be talking to Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Parker Olson is producing things down in Madison Studio A2, where he continues to believe. He's a believer. He's got the Brewers t-shirt on, a different t-shirt. Don't get me wrong. He does wash his clothes now and then, but he is adorned for game two tonight against the Dodgers.
You have to, Pat. If you're not wearing Brewers clothes, Mr. Kreitlow, why are you wearing a flannel? you are just not as committed as you need to be.
Or it could be that maybe because I was wearing it yesterday, I jinxed the team. And that's why I just put on civilian clothes today.
I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. I have thinking about what I've been wearing and the result of these games a lot, yeah.
That is the difference between your youthful enthusiasm and being a cranky old man. So stay on that side of the line for as long as you possibly can. Game two pregame coverage begins tonight at 6:30 on several stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to get one comment in on the text line from Jim in Appleton for our discussion earlier about wheel taxes. These are the locally assessed vehicle fees. And Jim writes from Appleton, wheel taxes are a far better solution to street construction than special assessment ever was. I am of an age where I paid both $20,000 for a special assessment in the 90s versus $40 a year for a wheel tax. If I were the only one that used the street in front of my house, $20,000 would have been okay. But of course, it's not. That is a very good point, Jim. And I appreciate you making that because, again, for all the years that I was a local reporter covering those special assessments for those street projects and the sidewalks and people that didn't want curb and gutter because of the special assessment, it is a kinder, gentler way of doing $40 a year rather than a $20,000 special assessment. Again, there's people that would take issue with that, saying that, you know, again, why do we need another tax when we could just be doing things in a different way? But it's a fair debate to have, and I'm really glad that Jim put that wrinkle into it. So thank you very much for that. You can always send in your thoughts as well. Head over to the Civic Media app and just use that text button to send us a message or give your comments on Facebook or YouTube, the Up North News Facebook and YouTube pages, and the Civic Media YouTube and Facebook pages. Joining us now is Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom, live from Washington, D.C. Still in the short-term place, the one with the really mint green walls that you've got behind you there. I mean, I get a hankering for Thin Mints every time that we mint chocolate chip ice cream. But this is what you got till you.
Every wall in the house.
Every wall in the house is that green.
Wow. Yeah, I used to be a fan of the color, but it is it's wearing thin. Let me tell you, I can't wait to get some walls of our own so we can paint them literally.
Yeah.
Color about this.
It does make for interesting choices for wall decorating. You made the right choice. Nothing on the wall right now, as long as that's going on. All right. Well, let's get into the let's get into the shutdown here. And look at something like the New York Times. And you'd almost wouldn't know that there was a shutdown because I get it. The two parties are not really talking to each other right now, but the shutdown is a very real thing. It's very much having an impact on Americans and a growing number of them as you have fewer federal paychecks that are going out and everything like that. And it just feels, Cam, like, I don't know if there's enough of an appreciation yet inside Washington, D.C. that, you know, this is having real impact outside of the nation's capital.
Yeah. it's, I think it's a result of us and maybe a lot more traditional media treating politics like sports, where it's, you know, they said this, we're waiting for the next, you know, controversy between the two parties, when really this is a good time for outlets and reporters to be digging into what's really going on. Well, just like you said, to what is actually happening on the street, you know, what's happening with people's jobs and daily lives who are federal workers or who rely on federal programs, or even the fact that Republicans, for the first time in shutdown history, aren't here to negotiate anything. Normally, they are here in their role, you know, their primary role in Congress is to pass a budget, to compromise and to negotiate and debate what that looks like. But they're not trying that at all. They've gone home. They're just trying to kind of ride it out, which is unusual.
Right. Because, again, in the meantime, you have families going without paychecks. We've talked about the food banks that are already starting to open up. And frankly, just even beyond, you know, the layoffs and the furloughs, you also have a historic wave of retirements, people who will not be coming back by their own choice. And those are not going to be easy positions to fill. So, again, maybe this is just me, but I feel like we've reached a tipping point in the era of government service. I mean, I don't think you're going to see a quote unquote full recovery from this thing when it's all done.
Yeah. And the thing that's hard to measure until you see the damage is programs that work really efficiently and effectively. You know, the sometimes the best people at their jobs are the ones who you don't even know are there. And right now what we're seeing is just the hollowing out of our government infrastructure with jobs of people who do that. They go in every day and they make our lives easier, but because they're so good at it, we don't realize what they do. And we're going to start seeing that. I mean, the CDC has been going back and forth. One day, you know, RFK Jr. fires 1,000 people. The next day, the administration is scrambling to hire back hundreds of experts because they're needed. You know, we have members of the military, like you mentioned, going to food banks. We have here in DC, there are, you know, tons of restaurants that are offering free meals and reduced prices to federal workers because, you know, this week they're not getting paid. Even the ones who are going to work are not getting any money.
No, they're not. And it does not seem like you have an administration that is anything other than gleeful about this, because again, the more pain they inflict, the more they can say that it's actually Democrats who are doing this rather than the people who want to make all the slashing of healthcare and exacerbating this. Because again, I can't emphasize the math enough. Republicans have the majority in the Senate and the House, and they hold the White House, and it's their inability to agree amongst themselves that has led to this. They are actually the governing party. It's just that they choose not to.
Yeah. And really, you know, when you only need five, you know, in the Senate, you only need a couple of votes. How hard would it be to actually meet with senators individually, you know, Democrats, and try and win them over, try and give them, you know, something for their state or something for their constituents that would cause them to compromise? Or even, you know, they could do something that I guess is unheard of for congressional Republicans and give the Democrats one of the three things that they're asking for, which is to keep our healthcare laws, to restore funding for public broadcasts, and to provide security for public officials, which is another sticking point that Republicans, for whatever reason, don't want to bend on.
For whatever reason, yeah, that puts it one way. Michael in Pleasant Prairie on the text line says, he answers his own question, what's going on in terms of the shutdown? It's affordable healthcare versus the Epstein files. And I mean, again, we have a lot of work going on to provide a distraction from something that could be very embarrassing to the Trump administration. They're really just looking to engage in quite literal propaganda, which takes us to Kristi Noem and the new video that you would see at airports. Before, it was a very informative video about what you can and can't take through TSA checkpoints. Then the Trump administration took over and it was more of a Kristi Noem, look at me, I'm telling you how wonderful the Trump administration is at this airport. Now there's a new version where she specifically to camera blames Democrats. In other words, engages in partisan politics on an official government video. And, you know, it's very Big Brother-esque. You know, here's a cabinet official talking to you on these monitors where you're a captive audience waiting at a security checkpoint. And it's a very interesting development, Cam, that a growing number of these airports are saying, hey, you know what? There's no law that requires us to play this video, so we ain't gonna.
Yeah, yeah. I we were talking earlier, both of us were traveling this past week, you know, as the shutdown's been going on. And when I left Baltimore last week, there was Kristi Noem. Although it's kind of funny because this is a very ineffective Big Brother system. Anyone who's been to the airport knows that these videos play, but they're on mute. You know, so unless you're sitting there reading the captions as it's going, you have no idea what these videos are even saying.
Well, right, because initially, pre-Trump, they were very graphic heavy, just showing you things that you could or couldn't take through security. And like I said, the first Kristi Noem was just her talking to camera. And like I said, I don't think she realized that they're on mute at most of these airports. So you're right. It's not the most effective propaganda, is it?
No. I mean, that's what you get when it's a bunch of people who enjoy being on TV above all else. Oh. But we are seeing, like you mentioned, more and more airports are refusing to even air it. You know, by the time I got back home, when I stopped in Phoenix and Atlanta, I didn't see it. And it just seems like people and organizations and institutions are finding their own way to say, we don't have to politicize everything in life. People just want to get to the airport and get to where they want to go. They don't need to see the Department of Homeland Security director talking to us.
Right, exactly. Let's see. State Senator Chris Alfheim in Appleton says, even Speaker Robin Voss came to the table when a compromise was needed to pass a budget, when they needed Democratic votes. He wasn't happy, but he brought Senate Dems to the negotiation when the Republican Senate wouldn't. And again, that's a sign of being a grown-up. And so for people that say, like, well, you know, you need 60 votes for something in the Senate, so it's the Democrats' fault. Well, it's not the Democrats' fault if you won't negotiate with them, if you need their votes. It's really that simple. So in the meantime, you have a protest planned nationwide for Saturday, the so-called No Kings protests. And they're going to be all over Wisconsin, all over every place. And it really says something when you have cabinet officials like Sean Duffy and others who are trying to get ahead of this and say that it's all paid agitators and it's all Antifa. And it just makes Sean Duffy and the others look absolutely ridiculous that you feel that you need to pre-butt a demonstration against you.
It does. It does for anyone who is able to see the whole picture. What I'm worried about is that they say these things, there are these sound bites, and then, you know, this far right media propaganda network is able to take those, splice it with footage of violent protests and say, you know, this is what you're going to see in your city and cause unnecessary agitation or just cause people to believe something that isn't real, like what we're seeing with Portland and Chicago.
Absolutely. And although, again, they're going to do it anyway. And so if people, you know, people want to protest about what they think is happening in D.C., then they should. And hopefully without this administration trying to goad anybody into violence or intimidation. Catch all this from the Below the Beltway newsletter that Cam puts together. Head over to couriernewsroom.com or belowthebeltway.news for more. Cam, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Go enjoy some Thin Mint Oreos for me now.
Don't mind if I do.
Thanks, Cam. We'll talk to you a little bit later. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area in 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area coming up in less than 15 minutes now here on this Tuesday morning, live from Chippewa Falls, all across the Civic Media Radio Network, where we've mentioned a few times already, there will be this baseball game being played tonight. Brewers Dodgers game 2 of the National League Championship Series. Pregame starts at 6:30. All kinds of other sports happening as well. You've certainly got the Badger football team playing Ohio State this weekend. That should be interesting. Or Parker, let's do the glass half full thing. Glass half full of empty dreams. It could be the greatest Badger football victory ever.
Yep.
I am not telling you to go bet money on that by any way, in any way, shape, or form. I'm saying it would be the Badger football team, arguably their greatest victory ever, if they were to beat Ohio State. Are they still the number one ranked team in the country?
I don't think they are, but I don't know who is. Maybe they are.
Okay. So that would be something. So why wouldn't you tune in for that potential? Anyway, Badgers, Ohio State.
They are number one. I lied.
Okay. Going against the number one team in the country. So again, for the potential for a massive history-making win that you're going to want to tell people you heard on the radio live as it happened, tune in this Saturday starting at 2:30 on several stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. And you've got the Packers. We're moving, you know, past the win over the Bengals, which was great. But again, we're really trying to build some momentum on offense. We want to see them start to run up the score against some of these opponents. So why not the Arizona Cardinals, right? And so pregame coverage will begin Sunday at 1 p.m. on stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. And again, another 3:25 kickoff, which I don't know how those sit with you compared to, say, a noon kickoff. I mean, obviously, we know the primetime games, you get the national audience, but I mean, everybody's a wreck the next morning because you're staying up too late. The 3:25 is actually not a bad kickoff because you can get more done before the game. Whereas if you've got a noon kickoff and then the game's done and then you just don't really feel like doing anything, or maybe you had a couple of barley pops during the game and you're not really at your soberest, the rest of the day is shot. Whereas a Sunday 3:25, I used to really not like those. Actually, I liked them better when they were at 3 o'clock, back when football games didn't last nearly 4 hours.
Well, but
they moved them to 3:25 at least.
I don't like the 3 o'clock or the 3:30, whatever it is. I prefer the noon games. I feel like I'm just waiting around all day. Even if I am doing stuff, I just feel like I'm waiting around all day if it's a 3:30. Sunday night, for whatever reason, I have less of an issue with, though.
Well, yeah.
That's like an event, I feel like.
And again, if you didn't have that whole, you know, having to get up really early in the morning, like we do, but we do. And so we've got the 3:25 game. So that'll be a little kinder to us, although there will be hopefully a baseball game, barring a sweep, and that ain't going to happen. So we'll have competing sports events come That's Sunday. True. No, I take that
is
back. It? Sunday's going to be a travel day for this series.
Yes, because it's
back at American Family Field for games 6 and 7, if necessary, next Monday and Tuesday. So no, we won't have that. All right, I'll get off of that little sports soapbox there to tell you that the Up North News Daily Newsletter is out. Ellie Bordeaux puts that together. Sign up for it over at upnorthnewswi.com. And we mentioned earlier there is a Texas-based survey firm that asked thousands of people where would they most like to own a cabin. And there were three different Wisconsin destinations that made the list, up in the North Woods, in Door County, in Wisconsin Dells. And so you can get that article there. And then there's a story as well about the proposed data center in the Port Washington area and what people are saying about that. And then finally, there's a feature story, a timeline of the history behind the former Badger Army Ammunition plant in central Wisconsin. So for all of that, to get the newsletter, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe in the top banner. And this is from Dave in New Berlin.
I know what you just read.
We're happy that he's tuned in. But he says, nobody knows more about day drinking than Todd Alba, who, by the way, we want to say most of that is a bit, okay?
Most
of that. Look, what did we establish earlier today? We said that Drake cannot sue Kendrick Lamar for things that were said in a song, because apparently that's just Kendrick Lamar's opinion about Drake. So having established that Todd O'Ball cannot sue me now based on that for saying it's mostly a bit about the day drinking, that's what people, the fact that listeners are already putting that in the text line tells me the bit is working, which I really appreciate. Because you haven't had something like that since the days of, you know, Dean Martin, and the Rat Pack.
Is this a new bit? I don't think I've heard this one.
What? Just that
that he's a day drinker?
Drinking? Parker, how many times on his cut-ins with us on Thursday mornings has he made some kind of a joke off air or has held up a bottle of bourbon or pretended to pour it into his coffee?
That's true. He doesn't shower in Jack Daniels.
Yes. And I, for one, I'm here for it. Everybody's got to have their vices that they emphasize. And for Todd, that's great. And now how that plays into a noon game versus a 3:25, we'll ask him on Thursday.
He might be a little less rowdy during the game, or maybe he has to start earlier.
What do they always say? You can't drink all day if you don't start first thing in the morning.
It's true.
That's exactly how this is supposed to work. Where was I? I was talking about the newsletters. And by the way, we have a question of the week in our Sunday morning newsletter. And what are your thoughts on mining for zinc and copper and gold in the North Woods, and whether you believe that can be done safely and responsibly, or if things are just a little too precious with Wisconsin's natural resources to do things like, contaminate the groundwater and, some of the wetlands and things like that. That's my biased way of asking the question, but I want your answers. And again, sign up for the newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. Dan Schaefer, does not engage in any of this day drinking banter whatsoever, is going to join us from the recombobulation area next. You're up north. Welcome back on this Tuesday morning. Dan Schaefer about to join us from the recombobulation area, Civic Media's political editor, and we will talk about the Wisconsin legislature finally deciding to do some business and be back in session, take up some bills, a couple that we've referenced before, and one that we've not, because we frankly don't know if it's going to pass or not, but Dan Schaefer's here to talk to us more about that. Dan, we're getting a note from one of our listeners, Alicia, on YouTube, that it looks like, once again, Democrats are going to try to attach an amendment to one of the bills today that would fund a facility for homeless veterans in Chippewa Falls. And I bring that up first because you've got, much like the shutdown, the Republican strategy appears to be A, cause the shutdown, B, blame Democrats. Similarly, for the homeless veterans, it's A, take all the governor's requested funding out of the state budget, and B, blame Democrats. I feel like in both cases, they know that they got their hand caught in the cookie jar or whatever analogy they want to make. And now they're looking for like the right way to kind of, they don't want to say cave in, but, somehow work together to solve the problem. And maybe today is the day they do it.
Maybe it is. Thanks to Alicia for sharing that latest with us here. I think it's been such an example of how frustrating state government can be in Wisconsin when you have, Republicans playing this constant game of heads I win, tails you lose with mm-hmm. every issue. You talk about it with the shutdown. This is definitely another example of that. The Republicans caused this problem by taking the funding for these veterans' homes out of the budget. How often do we hear from Republicans, we don't want money going to, immigrants, or we don't want money going to this, that, and the other thing, people who don't deserve it. We need to take care of our veterans. Well, here's an example of how Republicans don't do that either. They just don't want to take care of, they don't take care of what's needed there either. And it seems like this is of all of the things that state government funds, a place for homeless veterans to get back on their feet, seems like something we should fund with a very small percentage of our state budget. So hopefully these amendments will move forward and will get through the constant nonsense games of heads I win, tails you lose from the Republicans and can actually pass something meaningful.
Well, I would hope so, but it would be helped if there were a couple of Republicans who would essentially speak out, because Lord knows Democrats have never had a problem with one or two members calling out their own party leaders when they think it is warranted. And I can think, for example, of Senator Andre Jacques, who was the one Republican who voted for an earlier Democratic amendment to restore this funding for homeless veterans. But I could just as easily pick on former state senator Dave Zinn, the person that I defeated back in 2006. He continues to be a tireless advocate for veterans. Still a rock-ribbed Republican through and through, but it would sure be a breath of fresh air if instead of just saying, we need to put this funding back in, if he'd say, my party screwed up and they need to fix this. Whether it's that particular issue or things at the federal, you know, shutdown level, a few more profiles and courage would be real nice these days.
Sure would. But, you know, it doesn't seem to be the era that we are in exactly for the Trump Republican Party.
Mitt Romney. Oh, sorry. I just, you know, somewhere along the line, we would get that. Okay, so we may see that vote today on an amendment to the homeless veterans funding. We've talked about some of the other bills that are going to come up, and so I want to get your take on these as well. One is the ongoing Republican war on quote-unquote regulations, and that we're such a heavily regulated state, and there's too many regulations, and we need some regulations to expire, or we need to pay people if they successfully get some regulations overturned. And I will simply restate my position, take out regulation, put in the word protection for the environment, for consumers, for employees. And you've got a totally different debate here. They know Governor Evers. They know what he vetoes. Why do they keep going through this exercise, Dan?
It's just a show bill. It's just a show to try to say that, hey, we cut regulations. And obviously it's going nowhere. Tony Evers is going to veto this. Sure seems like, because it's just seems like a nonsense way to govern. Like, you can't just, what is it, every 7 years having to revisit these regulations? Is that what it is, Pat?
Yeah, seven years, and a regulation would simply go away, which State Representative Jody Emerson said 24 hours ago on this show. Imagine if that seventh year happens during an election year, when the legislature is hardly meeting and there's even more pressure. Why would we politicize consumer protections, environmental protections, employee protections in that way?
And it's even take the ideology aside of it, you know, that Republicans want to cut regulations, or like you say, cut protections. I think that is a better way of framing it. And it's just creating, I mean, our state government is not exactly that active, not exactly a proactive legislative body to begin with. Yeah. So creating these problems that they would have to revisit each of these different things, you know, the assembly turns over pretty frequently. We get a lot of new state senators. You're going to have people revisiting this who might not know exactly what was passed initially. It just seems like a design to create more gridlock, more bureaucracy. And that's always, you know, what they talk about with these regulations. We need to cut bureaucracy, but by doing this, they're having the opposite effect. And, you know, that's is that often the case with these Republican measures in the state? Perhaps. But I do think that, you know, this it would just create a nonsense way to govern. And I think, you know, it would be smart to not pass this one.
As noted on the text line from Andrew, but regulations on hemp are OK. And again, it's very selective, yeah. You know, putting more regulations in to qualify for Medicaid, like you said, or other things like that. So those matters are going to be discussed in Madison this week. There was also a bill that we talked about that would remove one step in the process when there are officer-related deaths. Right now, if a district attorney decides not to file a criminal complaint against somebody related to an officer involved death, a judge can still choose to hold a hearing, look at the evidence, and make a decision on whether to issue a criminal complaint. There is a bill being considered that would remove that judge's discretion to do it and say, if the district attorney decides not to press charges, then a judge can't take this up and hold a hearing unless there's some kind of new evidence. And I really don't see a reason, Dan, to be getting rid of that safeguard, that bit of independence in case you've got a DA who might be a little too cozy with some bad actors.
Yeah, it's another example of how we're just trying to eliminate checks and balances in certain instances in this country, right? We're seeing that all over the place in the Trump administration, the Congress just not doing its job as a co-equal branch of government. And now we have examples like this where they're trying to remove, some sort of like legal oversight or whatever it might be. And I still, we still hear the term all the time, officer-involved shooting. The officer is involved because the officer did the shooting. Now, whether that's justified or not, we can leave those to the courts or the people who are witnessing the event or whatever it might be. There was one in Milwaukee last week where, I think even the family of the person who was shot in the exchange with the officer said that the use of force was justified. But that's not always the case. And it's just stop calling these an officer involved shooting. Cause again, it's a police shooting. The officer is obviously involved because they were the person who did the shooting. And so there's better ways to talk about these. And I think, again, you mentioned the fact that, district attorneys and police officers will often work closely together in these instances. And so it's just, we want to have honest oversight of these instances that involve the use of force.
We are talking to Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area. You can get that newsletter by signing up at therecombobulationarea.news. So we've gotten to the things that the legislature is going to be talking about. So we have the things that are active in the here and now, rather than we've often led with the governor's race, because there have been people making announcements that they're in or they're out or they get in and then they get out. And this time around, I think since our last visit, we've had the announcement of somebody who just was not going to get into the race at all. And that would be Attorney General Josh Call. So let me ask up front, on the scale of 1 to 10 of the surprise factor, how surprised were you that he decided not to run for governor?
Yeah, I would say somewhere in the middle, somewhere about a 5 or so. I think things had kind of been trending in that direction for a little while here, as we've been hearing some of these announcements from various candidates, Democrats getting into the race over the last couple months here. And I think Call had there was an article in the Cap Times a couple of years ago. There were some other quotes from Call suggesting that he would be interested in a run for governor if that were to if the race were to open up, if Tony Evers were to not seek re-election. But I think there are a number of factors going on here. I think for one, I think Call recognizes the need for a strong legal presence in the state in this time when Trump is doing what Trump is doing at the national level. So I think it's really important to have a strong Democratic attorney general, someone with experience, someone with that, legal authority to be able to push back and file lawsuits. And obviously he's been very busy this year doing just that. And so perhaps it makes sense to stay in that position and run for reelection. And again, it's, there's a lot of people running for governor. I thought Call would perhaps walk into the race as a front runner of sorts, just based on the fact that he has won 2 statewide elections and most of the other candidates in the field can't say the same for them. But I didn't think he would be an overwhelming front runner either. And so perhaps it just makes sense for him to run for re-election where he is. And I think that makes for, a cleaner race in some senses for him to run for AG. And we have this big, weird primary for governor.
Who I think, listening to your answer, if she were still with us, would be nodding her head in agreement, would be Josh Call's mom, Peg Lautenschlager, former attorney general herself, widely respected, and would I knew her just well enough to know that I think that reasoning alone is something that she would get and understand why Josh Call is in the right place at the right time, even if it isn't the big stage that people would want. So it takes us to this little graphic that I put together every time there's an update on the candidates. I started with this graphic with 12 headshots on it, and a lot of them had question marks. Others said in, then out, or in, or out. Or if you're Bill Berrien, it said then, and now it says out. So Josh Call's got the out, and there's only one photo left with a question mark next to it, and that's former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, and whether we think an announcement in or out might be imminent.
That is the big looming question over the primary right now, what Mandela Barnes is going to do, you know, because I think his entrance to the race would certainly impact, you know, fellow Milwaukee and David Crowley, what his path forward might be. It might impact, you know, fellow progressives like Kelda Royes and Francesca Hong, what their path forward in the race might be. And he has some strong name recognition, but, you know, there are a lot of candidates in Wisconsin. It's more on the Republican side lately, who have run in statewide races, lost, and then tried again, and then also lost. Mm-hmm. You know, we're thinking Brad Schimmel, thinking Dan Kelly with two Kelly. That's Kelly with two L's. And so right. I think there's a real concern there to consider.
Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area. We will turn things to the Brewers, sadly enough, and a little more live from Lake Wissota coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, we are back with Dan Schaefer here at just coming up on 8:53 now on this Tuesday morning. We were talking about the race for governor, and, you know, looming behind all of that, of course, is that there's also going to be a U.S. Senate race in 2028, rather, when it's I would say not likely that Ron Johnson would run for a fourth term. After all, he promised to serve only two. How many times do you want to be a liar? But, you know, for anybody that doesn't run for governor this time or runs and falls short, there's that right away. They're always, it's Wisconsin, Dan. There's always the next big thing looming.
We don't really have an off season when it comes to politics in this state, do we? There's always another election around the corner. That's for sure.
And more to talk about beyond the governor's race, for example, in the 7th Congressional District here up north with Tom Tiffany running for governor, you would not have been wrong in assuming that Mary Felskowski, the state Senate president from the Tomahawk area, would just slide right into that role as of being the Republican candidate for Congress up here. But she has taken herself out of the race, which was somewhat of a surprise yesterday, Dan.
Yeah, a little bit of a surprise. State Senator Mary Felskowski says she won't be running for higher office this year. She had also been mentioned as a potential candidate for governor as well. That always seemed a little bit unlikely, but it, you know, she was the assembly representative who stepped up to run for state Senate when Tom Tiffany, who was then a state senator, ran for Congress. So it stood to reason that she might follow a similar path in 2025 as she did in 2020 by taking that next step up for higher office. But taking herself out of the race for Congress for the 7th Congressional District to run for that seat that Tom Tiffany currently represents. So it looks like she will remain in the state Senate, and she's been, you know, a pretty significant presence there. And she had a pretty fiery speech for the state budget. She was actually at odds with some of her Republican colleagues in that state budget battle. You know, I think it was the first time in forever that the state Senate president and the majority leader of the same party voted on different sides of the budget. So I thought that was interesting. So maybe she's got some designs on what's next in the state legislature. Who's to say?
It's very possible. It could also be possible that she saw the writing on the wall and that the 7th Congressional District might have its first Nepo baby as a member of Congress, because the son-in-law of former Congressman turned Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is considering a run. Michael Alfonso is married to Sean Duffy's daughter Avita and has been calling around to county chairs, according to Dan Bice of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, expressing potential interest in running, which would bring in all of the Duffy family's connections and make him a formidable candidate, even though nobody knows him in this congressional district. But politics.
But as we saw last year with Tony Weed, a relative political unknown emerging from the primary in the 8th congressional district, pretty much on the backs of a Trump endorsement alone. You know, the old adage was that all politics is local. Now I feel like that has flipped in the Trump era. Everybody's attention is going to the Donald, and now I think all politics is national, is what we can
well,
say.
I would also say it's all politics is loyalists.
Yeah.
You know, we're not looking for mavericks anymore, and the fact that you don't know who this person is, but you know that he is going to vote with Donald Trump 100% of the time and never, ever, ever, ever stand up to him to represent the constituents is perhaps best describes where the Republican Party at least has gone in this day and age.
Sure does. It's you know, it's been a 10-year complete takeover of the party by Donald Trump and his supporters. There's really no one left who is questioning him except for like maybe one or two members of the House of Representatives who want to see those Epstein files.
Yes. And again, that shouldn't be a heavy lift. There's no reason why all six Wisconsin Republicans in the U.S. House wouldn't sign that discharge petition. Why are you helping cover this up? And yet none of them get asked this question, you know, as they're going around doing their local, you know, meet and greets and farm tours and things like that. So maybe as the shutdown goes on and they have to eventually come out of their basements, maybe they will be asked about these things just a bit more. In the meantime, we have our distractions here, and Dan, the question needs to be asked. Somebody with your great power and connections, were you sitting like behind home plate last night? Were you like, could you shout to front row Amy as you were keeping score, or are you not in that class of season ticket holders?
I'm not in that class of season ticket holders. I was watching at my house here on the west side of Milwaukee, not far from American Family Field. But that was a tough one last night. You know, running into a generational pitching performance to start the series doesn't make things easy. And then, you know, we had the dramatic ending in the ninth inning. I'm sure Bryce Terang is waking up today wishing he had a bruise on his leg. Taking that pitch.
Absolutely
could have tied the game. Yeah.
It tells you those little things about instinct, like in that double play, the instinct to get that ball home as soon as possible, and the instinct to take the pitch, you know, when it's coming right at you rather than flinching. And there are players who, I mean, they just know in a heartbeat that's what you're going to do. But again, the human instinct is to get out of the way of a 100-mile-an-hour fastball coming at you, you know? So I can't really fault him. But yeah, somebody with a little bit more savvy of the game, willing to take the bruise, would have been a whole different inning then, wouldn't it?
I know, and I think of one of the guys on the coaching staff for the Brewers, Ricky Weeks, who was always one of the league leaders in getting hit by a pitch. He'd always stand in and take those hits, and I think, you know, Terang seemed to acknowledge it a little bit, and maybe that's why he's a little rattled, starting to chase the high fastball on that final pitch of the game there. Tough way to end that game. Thought they had it.
I know. It was so close. You can't face Blake Snell every game. So we got that going for us, and going to have much better luck coming up in game two tonight. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, therecombobulationarea.news. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat. Be well.
Yep. Have a great day. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We will see you back here bright and early, 6 a.m. tomorrow morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.